Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Now we are going to take a very close look at a tall grass prairie. Chris Heltzer is the director of science for the Nature Conservancy in Nebraska. He decided to spend an entire year studying and photographing 1 square meter of prairie. In just that tiny space, he captured images of 113 species of plants and animals. He has published some of his photos and observations in the new book, Hidden Prairie, Photographing Life in one square meter. He is on the line with me now. Hello, Chris.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And where did this idea come from to focus on such a small plot of land?
You know, I'm a photographer as well as a scientist, and a lot of my work tends to focus on small things. I don't know why that is, but when I walk around with a camera, my head seems to point down. And so I've always photographed bugs and flowers and things like that. But this project was just, I'm always trying to come up with ways to show people how much there is in prairies, because I don't know that people necessarily see them as anything other than sort of flat areas of grass. And it was honestly just sort of an idea that popped into my head one day, and I thought, well, I'll try it for a while and I'll see what happens. And it ended up resonating with people a lot, much more than I thought it would.
How did you decide what 1 square meter you would photograph?
Well, I wanted something close to my house so that I could get there quickly. So this is right across town in a little restored prairie. And then once I decided which prairie I was going to work on, I really just wanted something that was representative of the site. So I picked out a plot that had a couple of flowers that I knew were going to be pretty to photograph and would probably attract insects, and I just stuck some flags in the ground.
All right. And the first picture of this plot looks like nothing. I mean, it looks completely uninteresting. So did you make sure that there was anything in particular in that patch?
You know, I wasn't really worried about it because prairies are like that. You know, I flagged it out in January, and sure, everything was brown and pretty dry looking. But I saw butterfly milkweed pods, and I saw the stems of lead plant, and those are two flowers that I knew would be fun to look at.
All right. And when you decided that you were going to take these photographs in that plot, did you create a set of rules for yourself that you would have to follow? Because I can imagine it would be tempting to lean just outside your plot.
I did. So I allowed myself more than a square meter up. So vertically, I went as far as the flowers went. And then I also did cheat a little bit in that if there was a plant that was rooted inside the square meter plot but started to lean outside, as long as it was a plant growing within the plot, I went ahead and counted that too.
Oh, okay. And you started taking pictures really in the depths of winter. When did you really kind of dig into the project?
Yeah, you know, there were a couple of frosty days where there was fun things to photograph, but it was really, you know, May when the first leaves started to pop out that I started spending more time there. And then really it wasn't until June until I think I saw my first wildflower blooming. But even in May, it was surprising to me as someone who studies prairies and spends a lot of time looking closely at them. I was surprised how much fun I was having, even just finding, you know, an ant on a leaf, or the way a leaf was uncurling from its bud was something that was really fun to look at and photograph.
Well, and you even write that you wish that you had spent more time there in March and April.
Right. Yeah. I think knowing then what I know now, I would have definitely looked for more things. I was just out this morning. In fact, I'm up in north central Nebraska right now, and I was out in an area that was burned a couple weeks ago. It was cold this morning. It's been frosty. And yet, as I was walking around, I found a little spider on a spider web, which is crazy this time of year, but it shows the kinds of things that are out there. And if I would have been looking, I might have found something fun like that, too.
All right, let's talk about flies, because you have a lot of photos of different kinds of flies in this book. And really, a surprise. surprising number of species of flies. Tell me more about the role that they play in a tall grass prairie and how many different kinds there are.
Well, we don't know how many kinds there are because there are so many that haven't been described by science yet. The estimate for North America is an astonishing 61,000 species of flies. And that includes things like mosquitoes, which are technically a kind of fly, and there's, you know, probably hundreds or thousands of species of mosquitoes, probably hundreds. But there are flies that are scavengers, there are flies that are predators, there are flies that are pollinators. They do all kinds of things, and they tend to do something different as a larva than as an adult. So you might have a fly that, as a larva, feeds on, you know, a dead animal, but then as an adult is a pollinator. So they do all kinds of things, and because there are so many different kinds, they have an overlapping set of roles so that they kind of build resilience in the prairie. If there's a species that, you know, isn't doing well one year, there's other going to be other flies that can pick up the slack and fill that job.
Well, and you photographed 22 different species of flies. You also photographed a lot of other insects. Did you find that you had to do a lot of research once you started looking at your photos and blew them up to try to figure out what you had taken pictures of?
Yeah, I did. I'm not an entomologist. I'm not an expert with insects, but I photographed enough of them that I have a basic understanding of what I was looking at, and then I relied on friends who know a lot more than I do to help me identify them. And also, there's a website called Bug Guide that is really handy. You can send them a photo, and they can identify it for you and let you know what it is. And then the other part of that was trying to learn as much as I could about what each of those flies, you know, do, and it. Sometimes I couldn't tell. We don't know enough about a lot of them, so I just had to guess.
You, another insect that you spend a little bit of time on and have some really remarkable photos of is one that you call a zombie insect. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, that was a fun morning. I was really having a hard time finding much that was moving around, but it was a dewy morning, so the leaves were wet, and there was what I thought was an exoskeleton of some kind of an insect, a tiny little exoskeleton, like the insect had bolted out of it into something else, right? So it had grown too big for its skin.
Right.
So I started taking pictures of it, and I thought, well, this is great because it's not moving because it's just a skeleton. And then it started to walk, and the first thought that went through my head, half seriously, was I've just discovered a zombie insect. And then I realized that's, you know, obviously not the case. But then the question was, well, what looks so translucent that I thought it was empty and then still has the ability to walk around and move? And it turned out to be a plant hopper that I had never heard of before in my life. And, you know, I discovered it in this little tiny plot.
Well, and it's so interesting to look at the photos of this insect because from a side profile, I see exactly what you saw, where it looks like it's a desiccated little shell.
Yeah.
And then you have a view from the top of the insect, and it has the most delicate and beautiful wings.
Yeah, with like an iridescent blue sheen to it. It's a gorgeous insect.
When you started this project, you mentioned, you know, seeing that, all right, I'm going to have some blossoms in this prairie and things that I'm excited about seeing. And then you found that some of the things that you were most excited about really let you down. Tell me about the stiff sunflowers.
Oh, boy. Yes. So stiff sunflower is a perennial sunflower. It's really attractive to pollinators. It makes lots of seeds that are important for wildlife. It's tall and pretty, and I was excited when I saw it coming. And then I thought, well, this is going to be great because it's going to bring all these pollinators into my plot. I'm going to catch lots of species on it. And as soon as it started to blooming, it got attacked by two different kinds of insects. There was the first one that I saw was called a Silphium weevil, or a Silphium head weevil. And basically what it does is it chops the head off of a sunflower and then lays its eggs inside the flower before it drops down to the ground. And it's a really neat story. I was excited to see it. I got to count that as one species, but I was hoping that it wasn't going to do it very often. And then I didn't see another one of those, but the other flowers, every single other flower within my plot for stiff sunflower ended up being swarmed by these little leaf beetles that I had never seen before. And they just covered the entire flower with these little tiny brown beetles, and they ate everything they could eat. They skeletonized the petals, so they just looked like these ragged, shaggy little petals with holes all over the place. And then all the anthers, all the pollen, anything that might have been interesting to other insects just got devoured by this horde of insects, which, again, was a really cool story, and it was fun to see that and watch that happen. But it was pretty disappointing in terms of, you know, what I expected to see with the diversity of insects on that flower.
Right. Not the story you were planning to tell, which is, I think that's something really fascinating in and of itself. I mean, it's very hard, even for someone who knows prairies as well as you do, to predict what's going to happen even in this one square meter.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about prairies is that every time I go out, I find something new. It's usually something I'm not expecting to find, like the spider I found this morning, you know, on a frosty morning. Just the idea that I got up and went to look for something today means that I found something. And with prairies, it's something different every time I go.
You have a lot of pictures of praying mantises, because I think just because they're really cool. I'm curious, though, the praying mantis is not native. Both the European and the Chinese mantises are not native to North America. Did you have some mixed emotions about photographing what's an invasive species?
Yeah, absolutely. They are the most charismatic insect I've ever seen. They've got great big eyes. They have what are called pseudopupils. So they have little black spots that look like eye pupils that track you as you walk around, but they're just a trick of the light. And they can turn their head 180 degrees. So they look very humanoid-like in some ways. And they're large. They're easy to find. But you're right. The two species that I found in my plot are both non-native. There are native mantises. The Carolina mantis is a big common one, but it's about half the size of a Chinese mantis. And so I did appreciate the fact that I could photograph them because they're so photogenic. But I always, every time I see one, I have sort of a weird feeling, because it's, we don't know the extent to which they're causing problems in prairies and other ecosystems. You know, they're big predators. They can take down animals as large as a hummingbird. And that obviously has impacts, but they also take down, you know, insects that are maybe getting too abundant for their own good or for the prairie's good. So it's a mixed bag. I think what I tell myself is it's something that I can't really do anything about the larger problem. And so I don't really have a beef with each individual. It's sort of out of my hands. If I thought I could make an impact that would help the prairie by, you know, squishing praying mantises, I guess I might do it. But I just don't think that's probably worth it. And man, they're so cute.
They are cute. And you took some really amazing pictures of them. And you have a lot of pollinators, a lot of different kinds of bees, insects that are so tiny that you can barely see them. And probably the largest animal that you photographed is a tree frog. And that was a huge victory, just a personal victory for you. Yeah. Why was that such a big deal?
I have been waiting to photograph a tree frog for a very long time. They're a species that's moving west across Nebraska. They were, you know, historically mostly just on the eastern edge of Nebraska. But as we get more trees moving into the state, they've been moving west also. So they've been in my town of Aurora for probably a decade or more, and I had never seen one in town. I'd seen one before in eastern Nebraska, but I didn't get a picture of it. And I had friends that would call me and tell me that they had a tree frog in their yard, but by the time I got there, it was gone. And so the fact that I woke up one morning, went out to the prairie, and I was actually photographing a praying mantis when I spotted the frog, and I just saw this movement, and I just about dropped my camera. It was so exciting, which sounds silly because it's just a frog, but you think mantises are cute. Those frogs are so adorable, and they've got the cute little suction cup feet and great big eyes, and it sat so pretty for me. I photographed that frog for probably an hour. Well, not that long, half an hour probably. And it mostly sat still the whole time. It was one of the best days of the whole project.
So you photographed 113 species of plants and animals in this tiny plot of tall grass prairie. What do you want people to understand about that? That seems like such an incredible number, such incredible biodiversity.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's one of the big points of the project, right, was to highlight, to showcase the diversity of species that you can find in prairies. And, you know, clearly not all 113 of those species live enclosed within that square meter. They move in and out. They happened to be passing through a lot of them as I found them. But the point is that prairies are an ecosystem that have a lot of beauty, but it's a sort of a subtle beauty. It's not like a mountain range where you look at it and you can see from a distance why people are attracted to it. With prairies, you sort of have to dive in and get down on your hands and knees or look closely at least and see what you can find. And then when you do that, it's almost like snorkeling, right? If you look across the water, you don't see much. You put your head down into the water with the mask on, and all of a sudden the world opens up. And that's what prairies can be like. And I think what I'd like is, I hope that this is a project that will inspire people to go on their own snorkeling adventures in prairies and just spend a little time sinking down into it and really studying or spending the time to see what's there. Because I think people will be really amazed that it's much more than, you know, a flat, boring piece of grass.
Did it change how you see the tall grass prairie? I know this is an ecosystem you love and have studied and have spent so much time in, but did this experience change you?
It really did. It changed me as a photographer and as someone who understands prairies. You know, as a photographer, it really taught me to spend more time slowing down, which I thought I was doing pretty well before. And this took it to an extreme, and I've never been the same since as a photographer. I'm much more careful to look closely before I move on to my next step or two. And then as a scientist, yeah, it inspired me even beyond where I was at with prairies. And I think it's been really helpful to me as a storyteller, as an evangelist for prairies, to be able to talk about the project as a way to connect people to, you know, the ecosystem that I was already in love with.
Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chris Heltzer, the book is Hidden Prairie, Photographing Life in One Square Meter. And of course, today is Election Day. If you have not already voted, get out and vote. It is your right. It's also a privilege, and please be patient as votes are counted. It's going to take a little bit longer this year, and in a democracy, every vote counts, even when it takes a while to count them. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.